You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
This is East Carolina All-American Bryant Packard, and we're talking Pirate baseball in The Sports Objective.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on The Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. As we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome in to the Sports Objective. It's brought to you by, presented by Next Level Training Center. I want to give a shout out to Trent and Gaynell Britt for all they do. NextLevelTC.com. Give them a call, 252-756-NEXT. And Next Level Training Center is located on Wimbledon Drive. Check them out. Before I introduce everybody, we lost Terry Holland today and obviously suffering from Alzheimer's. And Coach was so good to our program. We'll have another show later on honoring him, but we wanted to take the time, just a few seconds, to honor him. And, man, really tough loss. Let's bring in Kyle Barber. Kyle, you know him very well, or definitely I know you were like me. We didn't hang out with Coach, obviously, but I would email him just like you, and he would email me back within an hour every time. It was nuts.
The amount of emails I sent Terry Holland and Terry Holland sent me over the years was insanity. Anytime I ever dealt with him through email, dealt with him in person, I was in my 20s then. You know, I wasn't, not that I'm a big shot now, but at least people know who I am. Back then, people didn't know who I was. Terry Holland always treated me like I donated $100,000 a year back when I was given $100 a year. And Terry Holland was the epitome of what an athletic director should be. Consummate professional, great communicator, did a lot to rebuild our football program, did a lot for facilities, was a great scheduler, and a better person, and knew how to treat people, treated everybody with respect, treated everybody like they mattered. Absolutely loved Terry Holland. He is the standard to me, the standard bearer. You know, you can take your Dave Harts and shove them where the sun don't shine. Wow. Terry Holland, to me, is the standard bearer for athletic director at East Carolina and my measuring stick.
Matt Semenza, man, appreciate you coming on tonight. We get Semenza, so it's going to be a great show, I promise. Told Scott that for extra innings now, we've got a baseball guy. We've made Matt Semenza one of the letter winners for football. He's now a baseball guy for the Pirates.
I am. You know, I love this team. I love the way they compete. They're never out of a game. And I really enjoy watching them. And, credit to you guys for kind of getting me so involved with Pirate baseball. But, you know, Scott made me feel a little old before the show started, fellas. You know, I mentioned that I had, you know, Bubba mentioned I had played football at ECU. And Scott said, well, that was before I was even born. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, so, exactly. I graduated before he was born.
It was way before he was born. I mean, how old are you, Scott? 23?
I'm 22.
22. So he was born 2000. In 2001.
2000. July of 2000 is when I was born.
Okay. So you turned 23 this year. Yep. I guess you would know when you were born better than I would.
Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, you're like 24, right?
Yeah. Such sad news about Coach Holland. We had heard he was not doing well, and we'll save a lot of those stories and memories for that specific show. And one thing I did want to mention, I guess back in the summer of 2005, when I had the chance to do the internship with Tom McClellan in media relations and get to know him, Malcolm, and some of the other folks there, Jody Jones, who's now the baseball contact for media relations with North Carolina, but had the chance to be on hand there at Harvey Hall when Terry Holland unveiled the awesome non-conference schedule that he had for the next several years, the next decade, with the likes of West Virginia, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, NC State, the Virginia Cavaliers. I think Navy was also perhaps included in that. It was a proud day to be a Pirate, as you saw the graphics that Terry Holland and his team had there in the Murphy Center at Harvey Hall. And then today on Johnny Gardner this morning, when we found out about the news, Johnny sent me the link to the original Undaunted video that Terry Holland put together.
Oh my God.
Back, I remember the first time I saw it, and just absolutely gave me chills thinking about everything that Coach Holland was doing with that video and otherwise to make our case for the Big East, which became, of course, the American.
Video was unbelievable, Bubba. I remember it vividly like it was yesterday. Haunting, stirring, emotional, and not cheesy at all. That was an unbelievable job by Terry and whoever produced that video. I remember it vividly. And I don't know. And we ain't going to make this about Terry, but I will say one more thing about Terry Holland. We're going to have a show for Terry. But he would communicate things, and I've said this many times about Terry. Not only would he communicate things directly, he would tell you stuff in the media. He would say things in interviews on Pirate Radio that if you paid attention, he was telling you something. I remember when Mike Oresko became the head of the Big East, he said repeatedly, me and Mike Oresko are great friends. We have a friendship that goes back 25 years. Mike Oresko has come stayed at my house in Greenville. He would say it repeatedly. What he was telling us is we're going to get in the Big East, which later became the American. And you don't keep saying that if there's not a reason for it. And I can count countless other times he did stuff like that. Just one of the great communicators I think we've ever had. And that's all I'll say about that. We'll move on to baseball.
And no doubt about it. In fact, well, again, we're going to have a special show for Coach Holland. So we wanted to do it justice, but we didn't want to go tonight without talking about him a little bit. Let's bring in now the ECU play-by-play voice of a Pirate, Scott Rogers. Scott, great to have you back. And man, I tell you what, I had to take some extra blood pressure pills for both those games with the Tar Heels.
Yeah, especially Friday night with that environment back in Greenville. You know, I sometimes had to check my pulse to make sure I was still breathing. It was so exciting. I had so much adrenaline flowing on Friday night. But, yeah, I mean, two exciting games on the weekend, and definitely felt like it was the month of June instead of the month of February at times.
Scott, I was on the way home. We went out to dinner with friends on Friday night and got back in the truck and started listening to your call in the eighth inning. And then, your excitement. Coach O got excited. I could hear the excitement in his voice. And I got home and turned on the ESPN feed, and this ain't a knock on anybody, but you sure are more exciting than the other guys.
It's that's part of growing up a fan and living your dream by calling ECU baseball. And it's exciting. It's exciting to call wins, especially when it's a win like that.
No doubt.
And by the way, the great thing about this team that, you know, Matt has told us off the air, it was the fact that this team has a lot of fight in them. And the one thing I said, I was telling my daughter who went with me, we had like a daddy-daughter date there, and we're in the whole bunch, the section, general mission section. There's a lot of Carolina fans, and I had my daughter go, "Let's go Pirates," and she would never give up on them. And so that really pumped me up. And I looked at her. I said, "You know what's great?" She said, "What?" I said, "This team at some point is going to have a big inning. I don't know." And I looked at her. I said, "I can't tell you which inning, but this team has something about them that, you know, they're going to tack on a lot of runs. It's only a matter of time." I said, "Their starting pitcher, the ace, is so good. Once he leaves the ballgame, that may give us a chance." And sure enough, I remember being behind home plate there, and Josh Moylan, when he was up at bat, I said, "Josh, you're due. Come on, you're due." And he fouled him off. He's down 0-2, and then he gets that double down the right field line. And he's one of the players I've said all year long, even preseason, that he's one of the X factors for me, if not the X factor for the Pirates as far as the hitting is concerned.
Yeah, he is. And I was going to talk about, we'll go down and break down each game, but you mentioned the big innings. What stood out to me from the opposing team, North Carolina has got bullpen issues, and it's a young bullpen. They'll get better as the year goes on, but if they don't, playing good a competition like East Carolina and obviously in ACC play, they're going to struggle if that bullpen doesn't get better.
Yeah, that was one of my initial thoughts about the Tar Heels this weekend. And that was one thing I said, you know, kind of off the air after the game was, you know, you looked at who came in on Sunday and it was the exact same guys they brought in Friday night against the Pirates, which that might be all they trust in the bullpen right now. But you have to think that there had to have been some other options down there to bring in on Sunday. But you're right, that bullpen's definitely got some issues, and it's going to be rough for them in ACC play if they don't get it figured out.
Going into last week, guys, we knew it was going to be an extremely challenging week with Campbell in the midweek and then the Tar Heels on the weekend. And unfortunately, we did have the one game that got postponed, and that's the good news that it's postponed, not canceled. Fingers crossed that everything aligns to get that game played during the midweek.
Bob, I'm not going to cut you off here, but I don't want to play it. We're 2-0. Let them sit on it, baby. They'll give them a chance to get their win back. Let them sit on it.
Hopefully the game will get played, in my opinion. But looking at, we talked about the, Dave brought up the big inning in Friday's game. Obviously did the same thing yesterday in the seventh inning. And that was the thing that was one of my big takeaways from this week. You had 3 1-run ball games, and then obviously against Campbell, you lost it in 10 innings. But in that game, you battled back, and you did have some help with the drop fly ball in left field, but you battled back from a 4-0 deficit. And then you had the 3-run deficits in the eighth and then in the seventh yesterday. So that was my thing, that after being largely kept in check or almost to the point of being dominated by the starting pitching, you stuck with it, and you continue to do what you do, and we're able to find a way to get the job done with the big inning once again. And so just that toughness, and man, Max Carlson for North Carolina on Friday night, he was lights out with that changeup.
Yeah, he was. And that was an unbelievable start by him. And it's 2 years in a row that he's done it to us. He did the exact same thing last year against the Pirates, but credit to him, what a start it was. And that was such a fun game to watch, especially if you're kind of an old school baseball fan where you love those pitchers duels. But it was a heck of a game to watch with him and Treya Savage on Friday night.
No, Scott, I wanted to ask you, I mean, obviously, you know, we're early in the season, we're 5 games in, but is there anybody on this team that's just really surprised you so far that's been very productive that you really weren't expecting to see that from?
Yeah, I mean, definitely I think that at the top of the list would be Luke Nowak. I don't think a lot of people expected him to start the year in the lineup as the designated hitter. Just because, going back to last year, he didn't have an at-bat at all last year, I believe. He just kind of had some pinch running experience. But, his speed and the way he's hit the ball – the start of the year is unbelievable. And Dave had mentioned, an X factor on this team. And I think in my opinion, he's the X factor on this ball club just because he's hitting the ball so well. And then once he gets on base, you have that excellent speed.
Scott, you talk about that excellent speed. He's hitting .435 now, team high through 6 ball games. And then you also have him, you talk about that speed, once he gets on, he leads the team with 5 stolen bases, and he's had multiple infield hits, including one yesterday against the Tar Heels, where he hit it in the 6th hole, and then on Tuesday, he had the 3-hit game, 3 out of the Pirates' 6 hits against the Camels.
Yeah, and a couple of those hits are, infield singles, but that's another good part of his game, because as soon as he's at the plate, you're putting pressure on that infield, especially if he can put a slow roller down, because they're going to be rushing, trying to field it, and know they have to get that speed out at first base. And that's tough on an infield, no matter if it is at the D1 level.
Scott, there's some folks in Pirate Nation wondering if you think, when we're, I guess, people close to the program, not that I'm questioning Coach, so understand that Coach Guy, I know that he has people listening or whatever, and I don't want to get Scott or myself or anybody on the panel here in trouble, but some people are saying that Nowak should be the first. I mean, the very first batter. Like, he should be the one, and move JC back to third.
Yeah, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's something that, you know, they may be might explore. But, you know, looking at Coach Godwin and his track record, you know, he likes to have that power at the top of the order. You know, you look at guys, you know, last year with Zach Agnos, you had Bryant Packard at the top of the order. You know, Connor Norby was right there at the top of the order. So I think it's good to have that power up there. You know, that's no knock against Nowak at all. I just think having that power at the top of the order is a little bit more better than having, you know, just that speed at the level, because there's not much power in Luke's bat right now. And obviously there's a ton of power in Jenkins Coward's bat. But, you know, once and JC's had a little bit of a slow start, but once he gets going, everybody knows that there's plenty of power there and he's going to be a monster once he gets going.
Okay, he don't want to hear crap from Billy. Billy, good God. He don't want to hear crap from Cliff, so that's Scooter's answer. He's going to say Cliff's position is right. And y'all don't want to hear crap from Billy either.
What Godwin are you talking about?
I was actually referring to Billy Weaver. He don't want to hear crap from Billy Weaver. Yeah.
and as far as JC is concerned, guys, you know, he has a 10-game hit streak going back to the Coastal Carolina game, the regional championship game last season. And so, obviously, he's hit safely in all six games in 2023. And no, he hasn't had maybe those big games that he'll have, you know, coming down the road. But at the same time, had that big single up the middle and his one hit in five at-bats yesterday. And drove in a run, I think made the game 5-3 there in the top of the seventh. And in 29 plate appearances, he's only struck out one time. So, I mean, that's pretty remarkable for a big swinger like JC to only have one strikeout.
Yeah, and that right there is a great example of it. You know, he's putting the ball in play. And, you know, looking at that the George Washington series, if you want to go back to that, he had a ton of balls put in play that were rockets, but they were right to people. And so it's not like he's up there, like you said, striking out a bunch. He's still making contact. He's still getting on base at least once a game. And so, like I said, you know, once he gets going, he's going to be just fine in that leadoff spot.
I want to say he had a warning track flyout yesterday to right field where the Tar Heel right fielder, you know, caught it a step or two in front of the wall.
Mm-hmm. Scott, as far as JC, looks like he played a lot more comfortable this weekend in center field. I know there were some people like, why don't you move him back to right field? But I thought he looked more comfortable, and obviously he's put the work in. He's fast. What did you think this weekend for the two games with Carolina?
Yeah, it did look like he was a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, that's still, you know, we talked about it on the air a little bit and how that's still a big adjustment. And so that's still working on that, I think, a little bit. But, yes, I believe he did look a whole lot more comfortable in center. And, you know, once he really gets used to playing center in a game-type environment, I think he's going to be just fine there. Because people got to realize, too, he's only been a center fielder for, what now, six games?
Yeah.
Is what it is. And so that's still not a lot of experience there. And so once he still gets that experience game by game, he's going to get better every time.
No doubt about it. And looks like, what do you think about good old Shaq, Joey Barini? Looks like he's doing very well. And not only great to have him for his defense, but he's been great in the lineup too.
Yeah, he has. You know, I never thought that defense would be an issue with him. He's always been an excellent defender. And, you know, I never really had a concern about his offense at all, because we saw last year that he came in a lot of times and got some really big hits for the Pirates, especially late in games. And he would take over at short once Agnos went on the mound some last year. And so but he has really excelled in that shortstop position, both defensively and offensively. And so it's going to be fun to watch Joey the rest of the year.
Going back to that Campbell game and really just throughout the week, you know, coming into the season, Tyler Brott, Willie Lumpkin, a couple of transfers that we knew that they were going to be, well, very, very likely significant impact that they were bringing to the table. And Willie and then Tyler pitched pretty well this week.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but Tyler having that electric fastball coming out of that bullpen late in games. And, you know, I think I spoke about it a little bit yesterday, and not necessarily on the air, maybe off the air a little bit, and how having that guy not necessarily as your closer, because you just look at a guy throwing 94, 95, your automatic thought's going to be closer. But when you can have a guy like that coming in the seventh, eighth innings at times and shutting the door, just like Treya Savage did a lot of times last year, is huge for a bullpen. And the fact that you don't have to have him as a closer in your bullpen because you have so many other pieces you can go to, I think is a huge plus.
And I really wanted to bring that up now as far as Lumpkin and Brott, just because in that Campbell game there in the middle innings after the Pirates were faced with that 4-0 deficit early through just two innings, Lumpkin and Brott really steadied things and gave us a chance to nearly come back and win that ball game.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, Lumpkin has really impressed me this past week. And, you know, Austin Knight described him to me as kind of a crafty righty with that low slot. And, you know, we saw with Ryder Giles last year at times how that low slot is a huge part. And, you know, granted, Willie Lumpkin throws a little bit harder than Giles, but when you have that low slot and throwing junk up there, keeps those hitters off balance. And we've seen that a lot this past week with Willie Lumpkin. But, yeah, he's really impressed me. And so I think he's going to be fun to watch going down the season as well.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Good analogy there between Ryder and Willie Lumpkin. Like you said, and Lumpkin throws harder, but that's definitely what I was thinking as well when I saw the arm slot.
Mm-hmm. No question. Scott, one of the things that Coach talked about is how deep the pitching staff is. And I think that's one of the things I'm really proud of, is the fact that before, maybe that Cliff would have to leave a guy in longer than he wanted to. And what's great about the coaching staff is we can play situational baseball, where if the guy's in for a handful of pitches to get a couple outs, because we know he's going to struggle against, you know, the batter will struggle against this guy. I mean, it's a great problem to have, knowing that we can kind of play like an MLB game like the major leagues do.
Yeah, and we saw that Friday night against North Carolina and how we kind of played some matchup baseball there in the late innings once Treya Savage had exited the game. But, you know, you look at, for example, on Sunday, and I can't remember the exact number of how many we had come out of the bullpen, but you look and we didn't use Garrett Saylor Sunday. And in a game like that, you know, Saylor probably would have been the first one out of the pen last year. And when you have so many guys not having to go to one of your most dependable arms from last season, that says a lot about how deep this pitching staff is. And I think that's, you know, one of the biggest pluses about this team is they're so deep on the mound this year.
And I love the fact that Coach Godwin is like a lot of coaches, where he puts those guys on purpose in tough situations. How are they going to react? And he doesn't care if there's a good arm, if it's a freshman or senior. You know, obviously, I know we'll talk about yesterday's game with Carter Spivey. That was very cool for him to come in. But these young guys, I really like the fact the coach trusts them so much and it gives them experience. So by the time they're a junior, senior, man, they've been in a lot of situations like a Garrett Saylor, like a Carter Spivey. So down the road, he's preparing them for bigger things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and for them to get that experience, especially that big of an environment on Friday and Sunday this early in the year, only prepares them for down the road and in the postseason this year as well.
Wanted to give a big shout out to Pirate Nation. Nobody's brought that up. I'm sure it was going to be brought up. But Friday night's crowd was unbelievable at Clark LeClair Stadium from an attendance standpoint and from an involvement standpoint. It sounded electric on the radio and television. And then yesterday, there But there was times during that game yesterday when it was a Purple Gold chant and a Tar Heels chant, and the Pirate fans drowned out the Tar Heels. They should be embarrassed of that. I mean, you could hear Purple Gold over that ESPN Plus feed yesterday. So clear over the Tar Heels chant. Great job of Pirate Nation.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. Friday night was unbelievable, but the way, especially late in that game on Sunday, the way the Pirate fans took over that stadium was awesome. You know, you looked all around Boschmer Stadium and especially down the lines, there was so much purple and gold in those seats. And And for our fans to have taken over Boshmer just like that, and we kind of had a feeling that was going to happen, especially, you know, early in the year, no knock to them. But, you know, a lot of people don't attend their games this time of year. And so when everybody saw it was a sellout, we knew that was going to be a majority Pirate fans, and it certainly was. But, yeah, it definitely felt like a Clark LeClair cloud at certain times on Sunday.
Yeah, and that's, you know, part of the beauty of this team is, you know, you look at the culture of this program that Godwin has built, and winning is now ingrained in the DNA of this program. And, you know, if you're a fan of this team, you know, you can be down 4-0 in the eighth inning, but you know these guys are going to fight. And so you have a lot to cheer for. And, you know, to your guys' point, seeing the Pirate fans take over Chapel Hill yesterday was awesome, and it definitely looked great on TV. But you know, you just get the sense, Scott, and maybe you could talk more about this, but every game out, regardless of who these guys play, they feel like they're going to win.
Yeah. And I was getting ready to say that too, because, you know, going back to, you know, 2014, 2015, when Cliff Godwin first got here, when we would play a team like North Carolina, or we would play NC State, you know, when we would win that game, it would be a big deal. And we would sometimes hope to win that game, not knowing if we were. But now, when you play North Carolina, when you play NC State, when you play these top 25 programs, East Carolina expects to win those games now. And when you win those games, it's not as big as a deal as it was, you know, 9-10 years ago, because you expect to win those games now. And I think that's a huge part of this culture for this team, and says a lot about the culture that Cliff Godwin has built.
You talk about the culture, and that it makes me wonder, you know, we're used to beating North Carolina and NC State, at least on a somewhat consistent basis. But last year in the Supers, we beat Texas, and then we had them beat again, and we just beat ourselves. They didn't beat us in game two. I wonder how much swagger and confidence that gives the team, even to new guys coming in, because of the culture. That, even though we came up short in the Super Regionals last year, I feel like that was maybe another step, just knowing we should have beat Texas, that we can beat anybody. I mean, not just the teams around here, but anybody in the country.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to think, obviously, that would give some confidence. But, you know, like I said, like, that was one thing with the regional last year. You look and you saw Virginia and Coastal Carolina, and, you know, obviously two really good programs. Coastal Carolina winning a national championship, Virginia winning a national championship. But we went into that regional last year expecting to win those games. And against two programs like that, and that's another, like I said, great example of the culture that has been built and the confidence that this program has now.
No question about it. Looking ahead to with this team, are you looking at Duke? Read today, we've won, Kyle, I know, not trying to steal your stat here, Kyle, but 22 out of the last 23 games East Carolina has won. We're 22-1 over the last 23 ball games. So Duke is better. I will tell everybody that Duke is better this year. They didn't play a tough opponent this weekend, but to score 52 runs in three games against Baylor, 52, it was 52-7 to be exact. So they're doing something right. I think being at in Durham at the DBAP, we'll see how things are going. And how about, got to give a shout out to the freshmen. Speaking of, with Coach putting you in there, Zach Root's going to get the start tomorrow. And what a gamer. I tell you what, he is. When I see that kid, I forget that he's a freshman, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, and that was awesome for him on Friday night. I know a lot of people wanted to see him pitch in that game, and, you know, boy, did he excel in it. You know, obviously he had to face that 1-2 punch of Vance Honeycutt and Mac Horvath in that inning. And, you know, other than that, the drop fly ball, you know, he mowed right through that North Carolina lineup. And so he's going to be so much fun to watch this year. And a guy that not only this year, but in future years is going to be, you know, he could be the next guy, the next good lefty on this East Carolina staff.
Scott, I made up another name for Horvath. Want to guess what it was?
I don't want to take a guess. I'm just going to listen to this.
I won't say it on the air, but just wanted to see if you wanted to guess.
Scott, you're a smart man. Not chiming in on that one. Very
didn't
wild.
Take the bait. No, didn't take the bait, baby. Didn't take.
I tend to take Kyle's bait all the time, and it gets me in trouble. So you know,
Matt, I think you welcome it.
No, his wife Chrissy makes him sleep on the couch when he does that with Kyle. So.
Yeah, well, that has happened on occasion. It's usually Kyle's fault, but it's all good.
I apologize, Matt. I didn't mean to do it.
It happens, brother. It happens.
Yeah.
And no doubt. You took one for the team, Matt.
You got to do it.
Now that whole context, the conversation, and then ending it with you took one for the team, that just you go edit that together, Bubba, and I believe you'll have a good laugh.
Yeah, quite the mashup there. But, Dave, here just a few minutes ago, mentioned Carter Spivey, and great to see Carter pitch yesterday. But going back to Friday night's game, this week our PGXGloves.com pitcher of the week is, of course, Trey Savage. And I know, Scott, you and I talked about that. Certainly some others that were in the mix, but had to go with Trey with the night he had. Six innings and just the one run that was allowed on the home run to Vanderbreak. And then struck out eight, just walked one, just three hits in those six innings of work.
Yeah, I mean, what a performance it was for Trey Savage. And didn't get conference pitcher of the week this week, I believe, when the Wichita State pitchers did after giving up just one hit and a start this weekend. But if it wasn't for that, obviously it would have been a no-brainer, I think, for Trey getting pitcher of the week in the American. But that says a lot for him. And for him to move into that Friday night role this week, I think says a lot about him as well, because you never know. You know, Trey Savage might stay in this Friday night role. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit off the air about him and how he's really molding himself into very similar to Gavin Williams, and how he started his career in the bullpen and now is working his way into that rotation. And, you know, with his speed, he's very similar, I think, to Gavin Williams. And so it's going to be fun to watch his career.
Trey, also a member of the all-name team. Trey, you savage. Trey, you savage. Trey, you savage. I mean, what a great last name.
And then in the ninth inning, obviously we ran into some adversity on Friday night, where it looked like we were going to have two outs and the bases empty. But, you know, committed to E there. But despite that, Zach Root kept his composure and being in a tough spot and got the save.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, repeat what you said, because I was reading stuff off the side of the screen and I completely blocked out what you were saying.
Just talking about the performance of Zach Root, I said he was pitching well. It looked like we're going to have two outs and the bases empty. And then after the E, yeah, he gave up a hit or two and gave up a run, but he did what he needed to do to close out the game.
Yeah, I mean, what a job it was. And for a freshman to be put into that situation says a lot about him, because there's a lot of trust from this coaching staff in him. But, yeah, I mean, what a job it was to keep that poise, especially after that error, because, you know, a lot of freshmen, I think, would kind of get deterred a little bit after that, but not him, because he kept firing right away. And, you know, that says a lot about Zach Root. And so I think we're going to see him in a lot of those big situations here in the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I'm just going to use a quick Dave Richmond word. This is Dave's favorite word, but he's right when it comes to, you know, I think about Root. He brings a certain swagger. He reminds me a little bit about Burleson, you know, when he would come in to close a game. He kind of brought that confidence and that swagger. I see the same qualities in Root.
What was the Dave word, swagger?
That's one of Dave's favorite words. He loves that word, yeah.
I really thought you were going to go with special.
Well, hey, this team expects to win, and when it comes to Coach Godwin, it starts with him and the expectations of this program. And Scott, I've said it all along, this program now is a super regional program. You know, it's not before, like, we were just trying to get a regional. Now it's super regional, and then we were so close. Like Kyle was saying earlier, this team knows they can beat anybody in the country. They can. You know, they have to have some luck go the way their way. Stay away from, obviously, the injuries. A lot of the cliches you'll hear coach speak. But when it's all said and done, this team deserves the I'll say it because a lot of fans are probably say they don't care about it, but we do care about it. The rankings this week were number 9, top 10. Now, what are you going to do with that? How do you handle that pressure at Duke tomorrow, you know, with a top 10 ranking? And I know that it's going to only matter in June, but have those two victories, quad one victories, and you've play a Campbell team. That game could have gone either way as well.
Yeah, and, you know, credit to Campbell. That's going to be a team to watch this year. And that's a very good team in Buies Creek, a team that's going to be in the postseason this year. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, everybody looks at rankings, I think. But I think this program has always done a good job of blocking that out, sort of say. You know, Coach Godwin always says, you know, ignore the noise. And they do a great job of that. And so – yeah, I mean, I think it is to certain teams, it would be tough to block that out, but not with this program. I think they're going to head into Durham tomorrow and have, you know, hopefully no problem with Duke.
No doubt. And, got to give a shout out to your broadcast partner. You know, I think a lot of you and Dr. Gary Overton, your chemistry, both of y'all is great. And, in fact, on Friday night, I got a chance to hear you guys. I want to give you guys a shout out. Thankfully, they have you guys there at the concession stand. My wonderful daughter wanted some ice cream, and the line was so long, which I'm happy, but it was like at least two innings I had to stand there in line. And thank God for you and Coach. So I got to give y'all a shout out for doing a great job with the broadcast, but also I knew what was going on. So I wasn't quite mad with my daughter because I was like, at least I have Scott and Coach O.
Ice cream is important, Dave.
Can you just tell her, McKenzie, here's a 10. Find daddy.
It was so many people there. God, oh, my God.
I know, man. I'm messing up with me. I'm just saying, hey, ain't no way I let my little girl do that.
Oh, my God. She was like, daddy, look at all these people. And she's like, and when some people were saying about the 6,000, that place was rocking. That place was loud. It was incredible. The eighth inning was, it felt like at least a regional atmosphere. Maybe you could argue super regional, but at every pitch, like, was the intensity you felt, the momentum going East Carolina's way. And it was quiet there in the middle innings. But, man, once – I don't know if everybody felt like, okay, we're due. It's, we've waited. We've been patient. Now we're going to pounce.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, that intensity was amazing on Friday night. And, you know, every single pitch, you know, you were right there on the edge of your seat, especially with the two starters, because you never knew what was going to happen, because you knew that more than likely there was going to be out there. But, you know, once I think we saw North Carolina go through the bullpen, we knew that we had to pounce on that. And so, you know, credit them. And, you know, I think a big part of why that North Carolina pen looked so bad on Friday night was I think the crowd had a huge part of that. And, you know, for a great example, the lefty that came in first, Dalton Pence, did not pitch at all last year for North Carolina. And so that's his first appearance in quite a while. And he comes in to 6,000 people screaming and hollering right at him. And so you got to think that maybe he got rattled a little bit, but you know, that's a big credit to our crowd and our fans, because that place was rocking on Friday night. And if it's like that, you know, even half that every game the rest of the year, you know, obviously everybody knows Clark Eclair is a tough place to play, but it's going to be amazing to watch if it's like that every single game this year.
And speaking of every single game this year, obviously we got Duke midweek, but Keith LeClair Classic coming up this weekend. Just talk quickly, if you will, Scott, about what you think of the field this year.
It's a good one. Indiana, you know, is a really good program in the Big Ten. Long Beach State as well has had really good success in the past. And Georgetown is, I believe, either 4-1 or 5-1 right now. I know they've been down in Wilmington this past weekend. They picked up a win over UNCW this weekend as well. And so that's another quality team. So I like the field this year, but I also like the Pirates' chances as well this weekend.
And Scott, tell everybody how they can listen to you guys. For those of us, unfortunately, they have to work for a living. I can't wait till I'm retired, so I'll be one of those older men that goes to every single game, road or home. But how can people listen to you?
Yeah, 94.3 The Game on your radio dials. And then if you want to stream, I know there's a lot of people having questions about streaming ways this year. But the best way to stream is if you download the TuneIn app, or if you're on your laptop or computer, go to TuneIn and just search for 94.3 The Game, and you should be able to pull up our feed right there. I know Sunday we are on 103.7 WTIB because of the basketball conflict, I believe, on Sunday. And so I have a feeling we might be on 103.7 this Friday now that that Tulane game has been rescheduled. But working to confirm that. But, yeah, for the majority of the games on 94.3 The Game, just go to TuneIn and search 94.3 The Game, and you should be able to pull it right up that way.
103.7's got a better signal anyway. I think Henry just switched that to a sports station.
That is that's above my pay grade.
I'll text Henry in the morning. All right, appreciate you, man, so much for all you do. Enjoy you and Coach O again, and we'll be listening tomorrow afternoon. I'll be at work listening. Don't tell anybody. I guess I just did. But Scott, thanks, man. I appreciate it, and good luck on the call.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Have a good one, bud.
Thanks, Scott.
Let's bring in now another friend of the program who's been with us for the last at least four years, Chris Edwards, the play-by-play voice of women's basketball, doing very well, and the men's baseball team. Chris, how are you?
Dave, I'm great. I was even better until I found out you're going to listen to Scott and not listen to me tomorrow. Like, what's going on with that?
I can listen to both of you. That's what's great about the Varsity app. I know we have TuneIn Radio app. I'm one of those nerds. You know that, Chris. I listen to you guys. And also on ESPN Plus, you do a great job as well. Chris, let's bring you in. And man, what a series you guys had with Baylor. I saw that 52 runs. 52 runs, is that for real?
Yeah, it's for real. I don't know what's more impressive, Dave, the 52 runs that Duke scored or the 7 that they gave up. I mean, I think it's equally impressive on both sides, right? I mean, yeah. Baylor is struggling. They're a young team. We know that. They've got 13 transfers. They've got 23 newcomers. But you still have to put up the runs, right? You still have to be able to score the runs. You got to hit. You got to catch. You got to throw. So, yeah, it's impressive. This is definitely a different Duke team than the one that you guys saw a couple times last year.
And, Chris, before we talk about this Duke roster and some of the personnel and the guys helping to produce all those runs and hits, obviously an East Carolina connection, a very strong East Carolina connection, former Pirate third baseman, and then former employee of Baseball Rebellion there in Durham. And that's, of course, Eric Tyler. He's the Blue Devils hitting coach.
Yeah, I love E.T. Got a chance to know E.T. a little bit this year. Our paths didn't cross. He was a couple of years behind me when I was at ECU. I joke with him about how young he is and how much older I'm getting. But E.T.'s been great. Coach Pobler talks about the staff all the time, and E.T.'s a big part of it. And just the youthful energy, right, that these guys are bringing. It's a younger staff. These guys are energetic every day. E.T.'s a big part of it, and I think a lot of baseball guys will tell you that it's a long season, and you can't take yourself too seriously. I mean, it's 56 games. It's a grueling slate, and E.T. has been so infectious to be around him. It's been great to have him on staff and great to get to know him, and excited to see what he and the rest of the staff are going to do with this program as we move forward this year.
Chris, you completely just answered the question about the 52 runs. You got a Pirate as your hitting coach. That explains that.
That's exactly right. You know, Pirates hit always, right, Kyle?
Always swing. You can't hit them unless you swing at them.
Hey, you know, if you swing the bat, your odds of hitting the ball go up 100%.
I've heard that stat, and I think it's true.
Yeah, and Chris, one of the things I've heard, Coach has done a nice job. I'm talking about Coach Pollard, and we thank a lot of Coach. He's been like you. He's been very good to us and the show. And he's one of those guys that, just like Cliff Godwin, both those guys, if your son goes and plays baseball with them, you know they're going to take care of him. And also, they're going to push them. They're going to make them better as a man and as far as being in the classroom, a better person, and also on the field. And with Coach, it looks like he's done a nice job. I understand that the transfer portal, you got a couple good bats out of there. And also, I understand the pitching's better, too.
Holy smoke, Dave. I mean, let me kind of answer your questions in three parts. I mean, Coach Pollard has been phenomenal. To me, personally, professionally, everything I have professionally, I owe to Coach Pollard. He took a chance on a 20-something-year-old kid who probably hadn't gone through puberty fully yet and brought him on to be the radio guy of his baseball team when he got to Duke 11 years ago. And I'm eternally grateful to Coach for seeing something in me. As far as the team this year, yeah, transfer portal has been great for this group. Jay Bashir is a Northwestern transfer, absolutely crushing the baseball right now at second base. You got MJ Metz, who's a Division III transfer from Trinity, but man, you wouldn't have known it. He has been swinging it red hot for the Blue Devils as of late, too. A couple big transfer arms. You mentioned those guys, Jason White, who you might see tomorrow in relief. I'm not sure. Jason's been great. He's a Belmont Abbey transfer. You go up and down the list. I mean, you couple the freshmen that we've got, the talented freshmen that you cast, with the transfers, and it's been a really nice mix. I said it on the broadcast, I think it was Saturday, Dave, that like you've got these older guys who are transfers, right, and they're juniors or seniors or grad students, and this is their last chance to win. It's their last chance to be good, so they're pushing their teammates, right, because they want to win. But then you've also got these really talented freshmen, and sometimes being young can be a good thing. Like, you can be young and dumb, and that's a good thing because you don't know what you're not supposed to know, right? You don't know that you're not supposed to be good, and so these guys have been playing at a really high level. So I think it's been a nice blend between the youth and the experience, and I really hope and I think that'll pay dividends for Duke as we move forward.
So, Chris, tell us about this club defensively. You know, Dave referenced some of the arms and so forth, but if you would tell us about the club defensively and, you know, how they're faring there.
Yeah, Bubba, they've only made, I think, three or four errors all year long. I mean, you've got Alex. We haven't even talked about Alex Mooney. Alex Mooney, who was the freshman of the year in the ACC last year, he's the starting shortstop. The guy is just getting it done at a really high level this year. So Mooney and Storm on the left side of the infield. Bashir's has played a really solid second base. MJ Metz is like a Hoover vacuum cleaner over there at first base. Alex Stone has kind of taken over the catcher's race, if you will. I think Andrew Yu is going to have a big part to say. They're going to push each other, but Alex has been kind of the main guy this year. We talked about the transfers earlier. Giovanni DiGiacomo, an LSU transfer, can really go get the baseball in center field. It kind of reminds me of a Joey Loperfido or a Kenny Taylor that Duke had a few years ago. Damon Lux is in right field. Damon's been swinging a really hot stick, too. He's been at Duke. This is his graduate student year. And Damon is finally healthy, and I think you're seeing that by the way he can go retrieve the baseball into the alleyways, the way he's swinging the bat. This is a club, and you guys know this as good as anybody else. This is a club and a program and Coach Pollard that preaches pitching and defense, and this is a team that's not going to beat themselves as a usual thing. They're not going to give up a ton of extra outs. They're not going to give you a whole lot of chances, and they're going to field 970, 980, and they're going to be hopefully in every ball game that they play. This is a team, this weekend notwithstanding, that I think is going to play in a lot of close games, and pitching and defense is going to be a big part of that.
Dave, listening to Chris right then, I have a new intro. I want you to start introducing me as the man that's always swinging a really hot stick.
Wow.
I'm not touching that one. Chris, you know, that's why Kyle always brings the comedic relief there for us always. Enjoyed, by the way, I know you're disappointed yesterday with the Duke women coming up short there at Cameron, but they've had a great year, too. You do an excellent job for those that love women's basketball like I do. And I had some friends that went to the game yesterday, so I know that you do a great job with that. So I want to give a shout-out. If people want, they can watch Chris do that. He does great, great work there.
Hey, maybe the Pirates and the Lady Blue Devils will meet in the postseason this year.
That would be great.
There you go.
That would be awesome. Kim McNeil's club has had a phenomenal year for down
here.
Been lucky to do, I think, what, seven or eight of those games on ESPN.
Yeah.
That's been a lot of fun to get to know that program and Coach McNeil and the great job that she's done.
No doubt. Let's talk back on the baseball diamond. I had to throw that shout out to you.
Oh, thanks. We're excited to Greensboro later this week, and hopefully we can get a little revenge on Friday night against Carolina.
There you go. No doubt about it. So with this baseball team, I know with Coach Pollard, and Bubba and I have had him on numerous times, and great job. And one of the things that we've been very impressed with is this Duke program has, what, at least two super regionals off the top of my head?
Yeah, 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, and so he took a program that, if you're from Durham like I am, you know that baseball, at least in my lifetime, I don't remember it being as good as it is right now. Am I wrong on that, Chris?
No, not at all, Dave. So Duke went to a regional in 2016, and that was the first time in 55 years
that
they'd been to a regional, got swept, two and out down in Columbia, had, I guess, a step back in 2017. Then 2018, you put together this great run. You go to a super regional. You went away from Omaha. There was a call at second base in game one of that super regional that cost the Blue Devils a chance to go to Omaha, but we're not going to relive that with one of our CC officials who we see all the time. And then in 2019, get to another super regional. You went away from Omaha, and then some guy named Kumar Rocker decides to hitter. I think he would have no-hit the 27 Yankees that night. But to be a win away from Omaha a couple of times, and then 2020 COVID, I contend, and I will always say this, that Duke team was going to Omaha. That's the best team that Coach Pollard has had. You had everything. I mean, Jarvis threw a perfect game that year. Now, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not naive to the fact that Jarvis could have, you know, blown out his arm or somebody could have had some kind of catastrophic injury. But on paper, the way that team was going, that was a team that I will always believe was going to Omaha. And then in 2021, you win the ACC tournament. You go to the toughest regional, I think, in the country that year with Tennessee, who was one of the hottest teams in the country. Liberty, who was really good. Wright State was the best offensive team in the country that whole year. So, yeah, but long-winded answer to your question, Dave. But, yes, I mean, baseball at Duke has never been better than it has been since 2016. And a large credit of that goes to Coach Pollard.
Chris, are the fans starting to get behind it with all the recent success? I know Duke's always known for great crowds for basketball at Cameron Indoor. How are the fans embracing the baseball program?
Yeah, you know, Kyle, I think for baseball, it's always, and it's probably like this in a lot of places, where once basketball is over, people start paying a lot more attention to baseball. That's kind of the way it's been. And during my experience, the postseason runs that Duke has had. Now, when you get a North Carolina, you get a Virginia, Miami, and NC State, you'll get some great weekend crowds for those. And hopefully a decent crowd tomorrow. Weather should be great in Durham, so we look forward to having a lot of Pirate fans, a lot of Blue Devil fans out there tomorrow. But I think once we get deeper into the season, you see a lot more Blue Devil fans. It'll help this year that the ACC tournament's back in Durham at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. But I can remember in 2021 in Charlotte at the ACC tournament in the championship game against NC State, there were a ton of Blue Devil fans there. And I think that's the point of the year, Kyle, when you start to pick up the casual fan that are just like, oh, Duke's playing baseball. They must be pretty good. They're the championship. Let's go watch them play. And that's kind of been the way I think it's gone the last couple of years.
Chris, one question I had, will Duke ever improve the baseball stadium? I know you have the DBAP, and I know that, and I love that. Don't get me wrong. In fact, I would love to see a game at Durham Athletic Park. But as far as Duke on campus, will they build a new baseball stadium or improve what they have?
Yeah, Dave, I think there are some of those conversations going on now. I'm obviously not privy to all that information, but I would be shocked if there are not some more improvements to Jack Coombs Field in the next 2 to 3 years.
But you could host a regional or just have it at DBAP right now, right?
There are plans, Dave, where they have mapped it out, and there is a plan where Duke could host a regional at Jack Coombs Field.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it would be awesome. I think it'd be a great environment. I mean, I love Coombs. The DBAP is great, and it's great to be down there with our friends at the Durham Bulls. But I love Coombs, and I think it's an intimate setting. It's a unique setting, and it's a lot of fun anytime we can get on campus.
Now, Chris, a few minutes ago before you joined the show, we were talking about East Carolina freshman lefty Zach Root. He's getting the ball tomorrow, it appears. I believe that was announced earlier today. So tell us about Duke starter right-hander, is it Alex Gow?
Yeah, Alex is another one of those transfers for the Blue Devils. And I don't look for Alex to be in there very long tomorrow, Bubba. I think he's probably a one time through the order, maybe. It's going to be a staff day for Duke, and that's the way the Blue Devils have approached a lot of the midweeks since Coach Pollard's been at Duke. It's the way they've approached a couple of their weekend games already this year. It's kind of like having an opener. Think about the Tampa Bay Rays and the way that they were able to navigate their way through the postseason and through the regular season, for that matter, with having an opener, a guy that gives you two, maybe three innings, gets you one time through the order, and then you turn it over to the rest of the bullpen. The one thing that Coach Pollard's been very cognizant of since he's gotten to Duke is not to overextend anybody in these midweek games. You're not going to see anybody go out there and throw 70, 80, 90, 100 pitches. No one's going to throw tomorrow to the point where they can't be available for the weekend series against Princeton this weekend. And that's just – this is the last, as you guys know, the last week before ACC play heats up for Duke. They're at home against a very good Wake Forest team. next weekend. So this is about continuing, obviously, to win the game, but to continue to develop guys, build up the capacity, get the pitch counts going, and hopefully get some of those freshman arms some more reps before we get to the heart of ACC play.
No question about it. With the series always great. In fact, you know, I heard Aaron Fett the day on Pirate Radio this afternoon on PRL, and I was thinking about you guys. But if you look at Wake Forest, Duke, NC State, Carolina, Tobacco Road, if you will, there's Charlotte's doing very well, Matt's favorite school. I know I get him excited about that in baseball. Let's see. I know that Bubba's favorite school, I'm just kidding, Appalachian State is 7-0 right now. But a lot of good teams in the state of North Carolina, Chris.
Yeah, there's a ton of great teams in North Carolina, and that just speaks to the coaches that we have in this state. It speaks to the talent we have in this state. I mean, look, you don't have to go very far around the state to realize that there's some really good high school baseball being played in this state. You guys know it as good as anybody else with Rose and Conley and all the other schools that are around the Greenville area. I mean, there's really good baseball in North Carolina, and you're seeing it at the college level, and now maybe people are going to start paying attention to it at a national level too.
No doubt, Chris. Appreciate your time tonight. I know you've got to run, but before we let you go, how can people listen to your work? I know the Varsity app, right?
Yeah, the Varsity Network app. Just search for Duke Baseball. We'll be there tomorrow because Duke has a men's basketball game. We'll be a one-camera ACC Network extra stream, so you'll get to listen to me do a little throwback one-camera TV broadcast, radio broadcast. So hopefully we try to do a little Vin Scully and paint the picture for you guys as well, too. So excited about tomorrow. Excited to have the Pirates come to town. Looking forward to a great game. Always great to be on with you guys. And if I could, just real quick, just thinking about all my friends down there at ECU with Jeff. Jeff was so good to me as a student at ECU and even after. And it's just not the same without the voice of the Pirates around. So Jeff is in my heart. His family's in my prayers. And so is everybody else in Pirate Nation.
And Chris, I don't know if you saw, Terry Holland passed away today also. So we have two legends of ECU passing away really close together. So we're really mourning the loss of two legends in Pirate Nation. Really close.
How good was Terry Holland? I mean, you know, Terry had time for everybody, no matter if you were the president of the university, right, Steve Ballard when I was in school, or if it was, you know, me as a freshman or a sophomore walking around campus. He had time to talk to everybody. And Terry's impact and fingerprints on the athletic department are still felt today. And certainly thinking about Ann and all of Coach Holland's family and everybody in Pirate Nation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris, my friend. Don't be a stranger. Love to have you back on soon.
You guys, anytime. Always great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Take care, bud.
See you guys.
All right, good night.
Isn't it interesting that Chris's first statement about Terry Holland was pretty much the same exact thing I said? It's how true it was.
Yeah. I mean, he's Chris probably went away, but he's a Pirate. So, certainly great to have him on. And, you know, guys.
I wonder if he'll be a candidate.
I don't know. That's a great question. Great question. He's definitely somebody that I like a lot. He's been very good to us. And by the way, guys, not to toot our own horn, but Matt, did you know that on Wednesday, just a day away, we have the podcast is 5 years old. We're going to be celebrating our fifth anniversary on Wednesday. So I think Matt's buying the rum. Are you buying the drinks for us, Matt?
I'll absolutely provide the drinks. No doubt about it. 5 years. That's a great milestone. And
yeah, Kyle's getting the champagne, I think.
5 years of bliss, right, fellas? Five years of bliss.
But yeah, 5 years or something, huh? It's cool that it's been 5 years. Dave, are we doing a special 5-year anniversary show?
I don't know. I mean, it'll be later in the evening if y'all can, but I'd love to do one, or maybe we can do one on Thursday.
Bobby, you got to find a clip for me. I'll find it for you. For me, you got to play it during that show. There's a clip from the Cosby Show where Rudy's turning five, and she don't want. Dave, do you remember this? Yeah. Rudy's turning five, and she don't want to turn five. She don't like being five. 5 year olds are babies, is what it is. Claire gets her.
That will always be a classic.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute, Johnny. Wait a minute. Anyway, Rudy ends up going, "Yay five! Yay five!" You got to find that clip for the 5 year anniversary show.
We should have Bubba.
Look, you tell Johnny to shut the hell up if he doesn't like my content.
Oh, Johnny Gardner, man. Don't be bust on Johnny.
Yeah. I was trying to insert that comment there. I'm lost for words earlier when Kyle brought up the intro that he wants Dave to use for him moving forward about.
I was just quoting what Chris Pollard said. I mean, that's when he always swings a hot stick.
You mean
Chris Edwards.
Who the hell is Chris Pollard?
He's the coach of Duke.
He's what?
The coach of Duke.
Oh, well, hell, him too. I hear he always swings a hot stick.
Matt, please help me.
I'm trying to figure out. I'm lost. I'm a little lost right now. But Bubba, we need to put your producing work to the test here. You should do best of the last 5 years. You could take all your cut-ups, your mashups, stay up all night and put that together. What do you think?
Yeah, Stacey Maddox. Yeah,
nothing like pulling from 5 years of shows. In a matter of less than 48 hours.
I want a 1 hour montage of Dave saying special.
There you go.
Now going back to Sunday's game, I know we discussed a few aspects of that, specifically in Carter Spivey, and then also one of the big at bats or two in that game by different players, specifically I think Luke Nowak, but. A very interesting start for Josh Groves. He managed to get through four innings. It looked like he may not get out of the first, but then he stranded the three Tar Heels, left the bases loaded. And, you know, he struck out five, but also had five free passes and ended up having a decent start after what looked like would be, like I said, less than an inning. But great job, I think. For the game, the Tar Heels left 12 on, and fortunately, when they did hit their home runs, and they had three of them, one by Honeycutt, one by Horvath, and one by Tomas Frick, fortunately, that did not come when they had all those runners on base in the early innings. And then we found a way to stay in it. AMAC hit the home run, and then we started to get the offense going there in the middle to late innings. It was, I think, 5-2 going into the top of the seventh. Joey Barini led it off with the single. Then with one out, really started to put things together. Cam Clutch got hit by a pitch. JC had that single that I referenced earlier. And then Hoove and Starr, you know, hit a couple balls right inside that left field line. Hoove scored a run, and then Starr, who had the big two-run single to center on Friday night, had the two-run double that proved to be the winning margin on Sunday afternoon. And Jacob Starling, he had a 4-for-12 week, and he is our PGXGloves.com Player of the Week. And so congratulations to Jacob. Again, 4 out of 12, 5 runs batted in, and then the two go-ahead hits, what proved to be game-winning hits in the late innings, 8th inning on Friday, 7th inning on Sunday.
Yeah, great weekend by Jacob, and well-deserving of the Player of the Week.
And it was funny, guys, and right there in the top of the 7th inning, and Matt knows where I'm going with this because Matt – was going to be unable to watch the remainder of the game. And he said, will you please keep me posted? Because he was watching the high school basketball playoffs there in Connecticut. And, you know, we really felt good about things, given that we were down by 3 runs. We thought we could very well do what we did on Friday, which we did. And Matt, right after I responded to him saying that I would keep him posted on what was taking place, he sent me this, and then Joey Barini proceeded to single to right field, and it was on from there.
Yo, B, you're going to need 27 outs to beat us, kid. 27, not 24, not 21, and show as hell not 18. You know what I'm saying?
You know what I mean? I thought you went a little Donnie Kirkpatrick there then. in terms of a little bit for sure.
I did have to. I threw a little dime at the end there, but
know what I'm saying?
That's a good one. I'm glad you played that, Bubba. You know, that is a testament to this team, though, guys. And we talked about it earlier. You just get the sense that these guys are always going to remain in the game. They're going to fight till the end, and that's a positive sign. But, you know, one thing I want to mention regarding tomorrow, I would like to see us jump out of the gate quick and maybe put up some early runs, because it seems like we're playing from behind quite a bit, which, you know, hey, you don't always want to do that. Every now and then it would be nice to jump out quick and take an early lead and kind of play that way instead with a little less pressure on you. So hoping for a fast start tomorrow and to see how we respond.
And then great to see Carter Spivey after an excellent outing of 2-plus innings by Tyler Brott, the VMI transfer. And I think Tyler had 4 appearances or 4 appearances already this season. He appeared in every game this week. But after he ran into some trouble there in the bottom of the ninth, they ruled it an error. It's a very tough play for AMAC. He did. It was a high throw, but it was. I thought it would probably be a swinging bunt, you know, infield single, but it was an E5 on the throw. But then you had the hit batter. So then Carter Spivey came into the first and second, no out jam, got the popped up bunt.
Which How was, huge was that?
Absolutely critical. Once that happened, I felt pretty good. I mean, we're still.
It felt like the momentum shifted back when that happened.
Yes, yes. Because then you were one pitch away with the double play. It ended up being what I thought was going to be a much – I thought it was going to be a situation where Hoove was going to have to catch it up against the wall in left field, but it was probably 5 to 10 feet shy of the track. Maybe hit off the end of the bat a little bit by – I'm trying to remember if it was Tomas Frick or who it was for the Tar Heels, but – yeah, when it came off the bat, I was like, uh-oh. But fortunately, Hoove had plenty of room. And then, obviously, the ground out to end things to AMAC.
Hey, by the way, Matt, going back to your point really quick with being coming from behind, we've come from behind 4 out of the 6 games. The other team scored first. So that's 2/3 of the time. And I agree with you, Matt. We need to have a huge start against Duke. But the good news is with this team, fellas, that this team, like we talked about, is built to be a super regional team. And if someone punches first, this team is going to punch back, and they're probably going to punch back harder. And that's what we're going to need going down the stretch in June, May, with a tournament in late May. And then, of course, the regional and super regional just to get to Omaha. That stretch right there, we're going to have to do it really, really a lot of times, I think, this year.
Punch back?
Yeah, meaning that somebody else scores, it's not the end of the world because we can score a lot of runs, even if it has to be one inning.
No, it's good to have that confidence to believe you can do that. There's no doubt. It'd be nice, like Matt said, not to have to, but I really don't care as long as we win. It's probably good in the season to have these kinds of games. Lots of times, season play easier opponents, and it's good to go ahead and get confidence built early in the year. I think last year our confidence didn't come to late in the year, but. You can get confidence early and keep it through late in the year. That's even better.
Hey, Bubba, let's go. I know that our good friend Jared Plummer, he unfortunately was not able to make Friday night's game, but also awesome stuff he had with coming up. Let's show that.
Yeah, really appreciate Jared's support of the show and him allowing us to use his videos that he uses on the @ECU Jungle Twitter account. Definitely give them a follow if you've not already done so. Well over 8,000 followers. A lot of tremendous content he produces there, and we really appreciate him allowing us to use that content on our YouTube channel. But Jared, and this is a trip he had planned well over a year ago. He and his wife are enjoying a nice relaxing vacation in the British Virgin Islands, and he sent me this video yesterday evening on Facebook. After the Pirates were victorious in Chapel Hill.
On ground ball to third. Makarevich has got it. Throw to first. In time. Woo! To get Alvarez with a third out.
Game over, baby.
Paint this one purple.
The Pirates
score 4 runs in the top of the 7th to take a 6-5 lead.
Woo!
With
got to feel really sorry for him there. That was a tough place to be.
Yeah, and I
the British Virgin Islands.
And Jared, he's welcome that he was able to use my property there at the old Virgin Islands.
That's Kyle's backyard.
Yeah, I own that. I'll let Jared use it.
That was nice of you, Kyle.
It's a timeshare.
Oh man, don't get me started.
And I'll tell you, that's the way to watch a baseball game, right there. You know, you have
Corona,
margarita, some kind of rum drink, you know, maybe some Coronas. You're sitting on the beach in the British Virgin Islands watching the Pirates win. That's not bad.
No doubt about it. I definitely don't feel sorry for him at all. But a great Pirate, and we appreciate Jared very much. He's always been good to us for many years.
Where would y'all rather go? If you could go to Hawaii, just for a vacation, Hawaii, the Virgin Islands, or Bermuda?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I'll tell you which one I'll rule out first. I'll rule out Bermuda quick because that place is unbelievably expensive, guys. Like,
it's very expensive. I went
there for a wedding one time. You know, you get a cup of coffee, it's like $7. I mean,
well, that's Starbucks in America now. You need to up your inflation more.
it's Starbucks on steroids. I tell you, it's
I'll tell you another one, Matt, that's very expensive. The Grand Caymans. The Grand Cayman Islands is so freaking expensive. It's unbelievable how expensive. Like, you can go to different islands.
Good, Dave.
No, like, gas is like double, triple what it is here. Burgers are like way expensive, even worse than like going to a ball game. The alcohol is, I didn't even drink because I couldn't afford it because I wanted to get home. But the Grand Cayman's very expensive, no doubt.
I am so unwell traveled to hit. First, both of you are like, well, I went to a wedding there. It's too expensive. And Dave's like, oh, you can't afford a cheeseburger in the Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon. I'm so unwell traveled, I can't even say it. Grand Caymans.
Hey,
Cayman Canyon. It's all the same.
Exact same thing.
I ain't been to either one.
Well, I'll tell you, for my money, guys, like living here on the East Coast, Aruba is the spot. And I'll tell you why. First of all, you're out of the hurricane belt.
Right.
The Aruba is well known for its trade winds. So it can be like 98 degrees, but there's always a slight breeze. So you're never really burning up like you are in, like, you know, in Jamaica or the Bahamas.
Come on, Pretty Mama.
Yeah, exactly.
He went through the whole thing there.
Aruba. 98 degrees, also Matt's favorite singing group.
I heard that.
Yeah. Kokomo.
Good job, Matt. High five.
I want to go to Kokomo, Matt, me personally.
Bubba has a picture of a 98, a poster on his wall, yeah, right? Is that Nick Lachey? Is that Nick Lachey?
Yeah, I remember, I guess it was, I want to say that my sister may have had one of their CDs or something.
Let me tell you boys something. The greatest boy band of all time is New Kids on the Block, and I won't hear any difference.
New Kids on the Block, huh? So we're going to have that debate on this show.
I don't think there is a debate. New Kids on the Block versus NSYNC, 98 Degrees, Backstreet Boys. I mean, come on. Yeah, well, get on the floor of the New Kids dance.
And New Edition and New Kids on the Block. If you don't have those boy bands and maybe Menudo.
Kyle, so that had been his walk up song, Hanging Tough.
Hanging Tough. Yeah. We're rough. Yeah.
No doubt.
Can you imagine? That'd be awesome. I bet it would get a pop like crazy from the crowd if some dude came out to Hang It Tough. It would be awesome.
It's a good song.
I challenge any Pirate player on this current baseball team to change your walk up music to Hang It Tough. It would be freaking epic.
It would be fire. Oh my gosh, Matt. I tell you what, you were talking about travel. How about Cozumel? Cozumel was not too expensive for me.
I've never been there. I've never been to Cozumel. You know, but you really can't go wrong with any of the islands. I'm dying to be in the Caribbean right about now, guys. Tonight in Connecticut, we're going to get about 10 inches of snow. It just started. And so the islands are sounding good. I'll take the Bahamas. I'll take, you know, Jamaica.
Quite honestly, Matt, you would take Emerald Isle, North Carolina.
I would kill for Emerald Isle, North Carolina right now.
How about this? By the way, Justin Butt says, the best is listening to the Sports Objective down in the islands. There you go, Justin.
There you go. All right. Let's get it done. Take us to the islands with you.
No doubt. He doesn't like Cozumel. I was talking about price-wise, the price point, not bad. I'll tell you,
if you're looking for a good, cheap vacation, it's nothing like staying at a 50-year-old hotel on the boulevard there in Myrtle Beach during bike week. That's a good cheap vacation.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm sure Simmons is going to come down for that. That'll go over really well with the wave.
Matt, you want to go to bike week?
Listen, I do have a Harley in the garage. So
I've heard you had a hog.
I'm looking to get well that too. But I'm ready to fire it up. So I'll head down.
Yeah. If you ever want to go to Myrtle Beach, go in the off season. It's dirt cheap. And there's,
oh man, Dave, I don't know, man.
You don't like it?
It depends on what you mean by off season. In the spring, in the spring when it starts to warm up, like March, things are still cheap, and early April, and man, you run into some riffraff. Like, so way off season, like February, yes, but once you get into the early, you know, spring where it's starting to warm up, on the weekends, you don't stay at a really, you know, I'm the type of person, I'll stay at a cheap hotel on the boulevard, mm-hmm. You know, so
Ocean Boulevard,
yeah, a cheap hotel. I don't have to stay in North Myrtle or Cherry Grove or anywhere like that. And so when you do that during the off season, just be careful where you stay.
All right. The Dew Drop Inn. I'm not going to stay there with,
look, I stayed at a hotel. So it's a true story real fast. And then we're gonna wrap it up. I stayed at a hotel one time. I brought my guy. Typically when I travel, I bring my pistol with me. And, I'll just lock it up in the hotel room or leave it in the car. And, I traveled, you know, I don't even, you know, well, I don't know if I'll say that. I was open carrying. We'll put it like that. I don't have a concealed carry. And I walked back and forth to the car every time we left the hotel with that pistol. That was a bad decision to stay there where we stayed.
How did they have free HBO and clean room?
It was just not a good clientele at that hotel. Me and Jessica was the classiest people there. So I'm
Kyle, telling is that? Is that now? Can you put a few quarters in the bed
and magic it, fingers?
It wasn't even fun. it was just a bad. I did that twice. We took a trip to Charleston a couple years ago, and I'm always trying to save a dollar. And so I said, "Oh, look here, we can stay in North Charleston for half the price of Charleston." You ever been to North Charleston?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It ain't Charleston.
I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. What show was that?
Huh? Yeah, Cody Jenks.
That's right, Cody. I remember you talking about that now. Yeah, I do remember that.
Cody's coming to Charlotte. I got to get my tickets. But,
yeah.
Bubba, can I stay at your house?
He's all of a sudden.
No, I stepped away for a moment. If I had more room, I'd love for you to.
Sure. But, I think Bubba's scared for me to meet Stacy. I think she thinks that Stacy will hate me.
Hey, Stacy.
No.
She doesn't hate me.
I think she thinks it.
I think you'd probably be a pretty entertaining meeting.
Oh, definitely
between the two of you.
I don't know if that's good or bad, Matt.
Either way, it'd be entertaining.
Speaking of,
you might love me. I mean, I don't know. I'm a funny guy.
Do you guys have any final thoughts? We're going to do the American scoreboard. I'm sorry, Bubba. Forgive me.
Yeah, just a quick look around the American, and as well as what lies ahead for the Pirates in the Keith LeClair Classic this weekend, and perhaps on Wednesday night show, as well as reliving some of our top memories from the first 5 years of the show. We'll also, whether it's on that show or maybe on Thursday, preview the Keith LeClair Classic and take a look back at some of our top memories from down through the years over the last, I want to say it began in 2003. Is it 2002 or 2003? So this should be what, year 22 or so of the Keith LeClair Classic. Perhaps the first year we had the tournament, and when we had Clemson and Georgia Southern, it may not have technically been called the Keith LeClair Classic that year, but nonetheless, a look around the American, South Florida, and the Bulls are 3-5. They split a pair of midweek games last week against the Gators.
losing 6-1 and winning 10-9. And then over the weekend, a very challenging series down at FAU, dropped 2 out of 3 to future AAC opponent of the Pirates, the Owls, winning.
They may be the second best program when they joined the American.
They've got a good program.
Yeah, winning 5-1, and then but then lost a couple of close ones, 8-7 and 8-6. UCF, which is obviously on its way out the door following this season to the Big 12. The Knights are 6-1. They lost in the midweek to FAU, 13-3. And then they went to Clemson and swept the Tigers, winning 4-2, 10-7, and 13-6. This week they play at Bethune-Cookman and have a big three-game series at home against a very good Georgia Southern team that obviously hosted a regional a season ago, that program, rather. Memphis.
Bob, before you move on, sweeping Clemson and then now a series with Georgia Southern, if they win that, we might have a challenger this year for a change.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely early it seems like the Knights will be perhaps the club that will push us, and we shall see. Going back very quickly to South Florida, and the Bulls play midweek at Florida State on Wednesday, and then they have a series. If you're a big college baseball fan, you understand how challenging this is. Northeastern, they're typically right there challenging for the CAA title, and with that being the case, they're a strong test probably this weekend for South Florida, three-game series in Tampa. Memphis, they're 6-2. Last week they defeated Mississippi Valley State 19-10, and then won 3 out of 4 against Youngstown State. Wichita State, they're 4-3, and they took 3 out of 4 last weekend from Utah Tech on the road.
Dixie State.
Yep, the former Dixie State. That was who BYU, of course, played in football there not long after playing the Pirates. Cincinnati, they're 2-4, but extremely challenging schedule thus far. And they were swept at Florida 13-6, 13-3, and 13-7. And this week, the Bearcats are playing Miami of Ohio, as well as a four-game series against North Alabama. Houston, Cougs are 2-5. They lost to another future conference opponent of the Pirates, UTSA, 12-2 in the midweek, and then they fell, perhaps, and I'm not sure if this is in some type of classic, but they lost to beat Utah of the Pac-12, 14-5, before falling to Texas A&M Corpus Christi, 12-2, and Incarnate Word, 10-8. Tulane is 1-6. They were, of course, on opening weekend, swept out at UC Irvine. They lost 6-5 to a former East Carolina pitching coach and now head coach at Fullerton. The Titans defeated the Green Wave 6-5 in the midweek. And then they lost 2 out of 3 to St. John's. So Tulane started 0-6 and then finally got in the win column with game 3 of that St. John's series, a 9-3 victory over the Red Storm on Sunday.
Bubba, you looking back at the scores, obviously talking about UCF, but Memphis is a huge surprise so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Memphis, not the most challenging schedule, but nonetheless.
Off to a good start.
Yeah, off to a good start under their first year head coach, 6-2 for the Tigers. As far as this week's opponent for the Pirates outside of Duke, we talked about the Blue Devils and Pirates have won 22 of the last 23, 42, 13-1 all time against Duke. And Duke, with that big sweep of Baylor, and Baylor is very much in rebuilding mode, as Chris Edwards mentioned a few minutes ago. But the Blue Devils were victorious 20-1, 22-3, and 10-3 over the Baylor Bears. This weekend, the Pirates will be taking on they'll be taking on Indiana, Long Beach State, and Georgetown. Long Beach State's 3-2, and they took 2 out of 3 from conference opponent Wichita State. And then they lost to Loyola Marymount. And then they were actually playing, I don't know if this was because of weather, kind of odd. They played a game against Seattle yesterday, and then they were playing a doubleheader against Seattle today. Were the LBSU Dirtbags and Indiana. Indiana's 3-4. And talk about a challenging early season schedule. They dropped 2 out of 3 at Auburn, losing 8-4 and 6-1, winning 11-2, and then had a midweek win over Miami of Ohio, and then they went to Texas, and they dropped 2 out of 3 to the Longhorns, 3 competitive ball games, losing 4-2, 5-2, before winning game 3, 4-2. So Indiana, don't let their record fool you at 3-4. They've played Auburn and Texas, a three-game series on the first two weekends, and managed to win a game in each of those, and the majority of those games that they lost were competitive. So a quality opponent there with the Hoosiers. And then Georgetown 6-2. They took 2 out of 3 from Presbyterian. And then last weekend, they won 3 out of 4 games down at, I believe it's a tournament at UNC Wilmington. They took 2 from Iona and then split with the Seahawks. And they actually beat UNC Wilmington 11-0. So that tells you a little something about Georgetown and the potential they have if they beat UNC Wilmington 11-0 down at Brooksville.
No doubt about it. And just like you said, a lot of these Big Ten schools, Matt loves the Big Ten, they have, weather-wise, they have to come down. And so Indiana, I've heard a lot of good things about them. And I think anytime when you have Coach Godwin, they know how special this weekend is, and they're not going to get just like cupcakes where they can easily win the Keith LeClaire Classic. So I think all three opponents will be great.
I have confirmed there will, however, be cupcakes in the booth.
Well, come up there, man.
Okay.
And some of the big results from last weekend as far as top 25 matchups, number 10, Vandy, took 2 out of 3 from 17th-ranked UCLA. And, of course, B-Dub on Bryant Ward still there in Westwood. Then you had number 4, Ole Miss, last year's national champion. They took 2 out of 3 from Rob Vaughn and the Maryland Terrapins, 13th-ranked Maryland Terrapins. And then you had – Southern Miss, ranked 18th, they dropped 2 out of 3 to Illinois, which surprised me a little bit. And then you had, this was the one that really caught my eye, Link Jarrett there at his alma mater, leaving Notre Dame for Florida State. The Seminoles went to TCU. The Horned Frogs are ranked 8th. The Seminoles won 2 out of 3. So turning some heads, and the Seminoles are off to, I think, a 6-1 start.
Yes, good for him. Once fired, always fired. But something you had said, Bubba, that I was going to mention. Oh, I know what it was. It wasn't directly something you said. I know we move up to number 9 and die, but it was D1 baseball or the coaches poll. Did Baseball America move us up from 24 to 23 this week or what?
I actually, curious a little, I have not even bothered to look at that poll because I just saw Baseball America.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
And last week, that was misleading because there was a typo there. We had not dropped 7 spots or whatever it was because we were ranked 24th in Baseball America, and we held serve at 24. There was that typo in the previous ranking column. But, yeah, always interesting with that publication to see the discrepancy there. It'd be interesting to see. Surely after a pair of wins over number 12, North Carolina, we moved up to somewhere between 15 and 20.
Maybe we can have somebody on from Baseball America and we can ask them about it.
Let's do it.
I'd like to. D1 Baseball, the first far superior publication.
By the way, the great Carolina fans that just can't get over themselves that East Carolina has a great baseball program, and it just amazes me the message boards, how they can't.
Oh, they're just ignorant.
Yeah, they can't understand how, and one fan even called us ECTC, like that's a derogatory term that's on Twitter today. I saw that. So.
I don't let Tar Heel fans bother me because when you know, I always picture it in my head like this. Forget now, we ain't talking about the Wall Hills. You know, you go to Walmart and buy a baseball hat and a T-shirt during basketball season and say they're Tar Heels. I ain't talking about those. I ain't talking about those guys. Those are a big bunch of rednecks and street trash. But what I'm talking about is the real Carolina fans, the ones that, you know, like the white and cheese, if you will. I always picture a group of them taking on a group of pirates in a fight and what would happen.
Oh, man. I mean, that's why we have the best nickname in all of America, Pirates. It says it best for Eastern North Carolina. It says it best for our history. If you know anything about geography, it says it best for being the underdog. Everything about it is perfect. Thanks to JR, Johnny Robertson, EC was number 20 in Baseball America.
So all right, up four spots.
Up 20. Yeah. Man, moving up four.
Where's Carolina ranked? Are they still ranked above us?
I'm sure. Hey, Kyle, you sound like Casey Kasem. Moving up four spots this week, it's East Carolina with Paint It Purple.
That's pretty good, actually, Dave.
Yeah, Bubba, I was waiting for you. I thought you were going to say something.
No, just appreciate everyone tuning in and to promote some of our upcoming content. Like Dave said, on Wednesday, we'll have a look back at some of the highlights over the last 5 years and highlights, lowlights, and moments to laugh at.
Our useless content.
Now that it's so far into the past, the debacle against North Carolina A&T, where we got we had our podcast linked to the North Carolina A&T equivalent of Hoist the Colors, and
show me the money.
One of our most listened to audio only podcasts of all time, and it was mostly A&T fans listening to us, either getting mad or laughing, or both.
Yeah. By the way, JR says that Carolina is number 22 in Baseball America's poll. So there you go, Kyle. They're
22. I thought we were 20.
No, we're 20 and Carolina's 22.
Oh, Carolina's 22. Okay, well, good. At least they're fair.
Yep.
And then also, as far as promoting some of the upcoming content or things we already have on our YouTube channel, we've mentioned time and again on just access the Sports Objective YouTube channel by simply searching the Sports Objective. And then once you're there, you can look at our playlist. We have everything grouped together by show. You have the Absolute Empowerment Archives with Coach Jeff Connors. You have excellent interviews with Jeff Carr, Vonte Leach, Junior Smith, Emmanuel McDaniel, and a host of other former Pirate players, Hall of Famers. Or guys who will be Hall of Famers in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Guys like Leonard Henry. Some tremendous content there. Coach Connor's most recent show tonight was Dr. Rick Perea. He's a former NFL player, sports psychologist, author, motivational speaker. They discussed a variety of topics, so definitely go to our YouTube channel and check that out. Coach Connor's. He's doing a tremendous job, and we appreciate all he does.
No doubt. In fact, what about Coach Connors being in the EC Hall of Fame for all the wins? He had 50, I think it's from 50 Power 5 wins, guys, during his time as a Pirate, being the strength and conditioning coach. So something around that nature. He and I talked about that one day. So he's one that I would vote in. Why isn't he in the Hall of Fame? Why isn't Skip Holtz in the Hall of Fame? I think he should be in the Hall of Fame for sure. And I think eventually
TH isn't in, is he?
No, Terry Holland's not in.
Oh, he needs to be Jeff in this Charles year along with Jeff Charles. They both need to be in this year.
Yep. And how about and eventually our good buddy, part of our show, Terry Gallagher, love to have him in there too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of deserving Pirates for the Hall of Fame. I want to say this real fast, guys, and I'll shut up and we can wrap it up. I met a guy today, won't say where, but we were sitting there for a while talking, and noticed his East Carolina apparel until we started talking, and I was in Greenville, so I shouldn't have shot somebody who's having East Carolina apparel, but struck up a conversation. The big Pirate, turned out he lived right down the road from me, literally lives right down the road from me. And his stepdaughter is my next door neighbor. I had no idea. So it's funny how you can meet people just out in public. And it turns out they, you know, their stepdaughter's your neighbor. So it's just a small world.
No doubt. I mean, but it just goes to show you how many Pirate fans there are. And we appreciate one final thing, guys. I want to say a big shout out. I've had a lot of people in the last few weeks. I've been telling you all between basketball and baseball games, they're coming up to me saying they listen or watch the show. Thank you so much. It means a lot. And we appreciate your support of the program. Speaking of the support of the program, got to give a shout out to Next Level. Next Level Training Center presents this show, Extra Innings. And you can go to nextleveltc.com. Give them a call, 252-756-NEXT. And Bubba, I know that a lot of other great sponsors too. How about LNK Custom Homes? Want to give them a shout out with Kevin KK Walker, one of our good friends. He's been with us for a long time. And LNK Custom Homes, 336-688-8461. I wonder if he'd build the house in the Virgin Islands for Kyle. But I think that's his next big project. But
I'm actually not allowed in the Virgin Islands because I would ruin their reputation.
Okay. And also pgxgloves.com, moving right along. Kyle, they've got a lot of great stuff there at pgxgloves.com.
Yeah, always this time of year, you need batting gloves for your boys and girls for softball and baseball. Maybe you're getting geared up for warm weather and the golf season coming up. Get yourself some golf gloves. Now is the time for purchasing sporting gloves, no doubt. Promo code ECU at checkout, save yourself 25%.
No doubt. I've got to get my – I keep saying that. I'll do that this week, and maybe I can do it right after the show. The promo code ECU for Alex is playing baseball again. McKenzie's playing softball. The kids really love their gloves. They really pop, as they say. And, again, go to pgxgloves.com. Mark Minakazi, appreciate your support of the program. Guys, do you have anything before we go?
I had something and it slipped my mind. Probably at this point it's good because it's time to wrap it up.
All right. Sounds good. I've got something, but I'll save it as well. All right. Thank you, Bubba, very much for your support of the program. Appreciate, of course, play-by-play voice of the East Carolina Baseball Pirates, Scott Rogers, the play-by-play voice of the East, the Duke Blue Devils baseball team. And that's Chris Edwards.
And premonition on Dave's part.
Yeah. And how about Matt Simmons? Appreciate him very much. Kyle, thank you, Bubba. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to Extra Innings, brought to you by our good friends at Next Level Training Center in Greenville. And until next time, we'll
Hey, wait. I did remember what I was going to say, and this is important, or I wouldn't interrupt your closing. But I want to give a biggest shout out to Charlie Choo Choo Justice. He shared something with me today, and it's always nice when somebody shares something with you, and particularly when it fires you up and inspires you. So I want to thank ECU legend Charlie Choo Choo Justice for that.
He's awesome, and I appreciate him very much. All right, we'll get out of here. And as always, thanks for listening and watching. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
Hey, Pirate Nation, this is former East Carolina pitcher Davey Penny of the Keith LeClair era, class of 2003. Keep it tuned to the Sports Objective as you follow our Diamond Bucks on the road to Omaha, because y'all know we're going.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!